We were looking at Revelation chapter 21, if you can turn there. And I'm just going to read the first verse where it says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea." And we looked at this verse, and it's kind of interesting and unusual that God emphasizes there's no more sea, because He said the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. That would include the sea. It would include all the oceans and everything, because it's all part of this world. But of all the things God could have emphasized, He emphasized the sea. There's no more sea. And then, remember, we looked at Isaiah 57 in the last couple of verses in Isaiah chapter 57, verse 20. "But the wicked are like the troubled sea, when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked." The wicked are like the troubled sea. Well, and the sea is no more. The sea is no more. When God destroys heaven and He destroys earth, the sea is no more. And, we've recently learned... We recently learned that time, as far as the timeline of history, which has led us to the date of May 21, 2011... as Judgment Day, and we've learned judgment. Once we learned finally the timeline, the next thing that we learned was judgment. It's actually coming up on about 3 years. It was November 2007 that Mr. Camping and Family Radio first began to teach about annihilation. I remember because we were kind of like all huddled around, people were looking at one another. Is this possible? How could this be that there is no place called hell? God isn't going to create a place called hell. And it didn't seem possible with all the verses that we thought taught eternal damnation. And yet, as we went along, we began to have our eyes open wider and clearer, and so we began to understand many of those verses which seem to teach a place called hell were actually referring to 5 months of torment. Once we learned the door shut on May 21, for example, if you go to Luke 13, in Luke 13, where it says in verse 24, "Strive to enter in at the strait gate, for many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able." Now, I'll just quickly mention that is never the case in this world. Many seek to enter in the broad way. Few there be that go the straight way. But it says here, "Strive to enter in at the strait gate." That's the narrow way. "For many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able." Where is that in the Bible? Where are they? Where's all these many that are seeking to enter in through the way of the Bible only and of the Word of God? No, there's many going every other way, that broad way that leads to destruction. That's typical. That's normal. When are many going to enter in? May 21, 2011. Now it's revealed. Now God has taken His people up. And now the idols are of those left behind are cast to the bats and to the moles. Now they want to obey God. Now they want the narrow way. They want that straight way, the truth that they have plentifully available right now in abundance. But man, in his pride and his arrogance, knows better than God and just puts it off. Well, Then another day comes and another day comes and another day. And before you know it, it's May 21. It's here. And then God has proven. Now man can see it with his physical eyes and therefore he believes it. And now he knows it's true. And so on that day, he will seek to enter in, just like Esau. After the blessing was given to Jacob, then Esau desperately wants the blessing. Oh, Father, Father, have you but one blessing? Is there no blessing for me on that day? Because it's too late now. It's too late for Esau. And God says, regarding Judgment Day, the mighty man shall cry there bitterly. And so, that's the nature of man. It's always after the fact, after the judgment, after the spies give the evil report, then they don't want to go into the land. But once God pronounces the judgment, okay, you'll wander in the wilderness 40 years, a year for each day you search the land. Now the spies say, and Israel too, oh no, we'll go into the land, we change our mind. No, God says, that window, that door is shut. That opportunity is over. Now you have to wander in the wilderness, and they do try to go into the land, and God isn't with them, and they're easily rejected by the inhabitants of the land because they don't have the strength of God. It's the nature of man. And so strive to enter in at the strait gate, for many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able. When once the master of the house is risen up and has shut to the door. So there God is telling us exactly when many will seek to strive and enter in the strait gate. May 21, the day the door shuts. And ye begin to stand without and to knock at the door, saying, Lord, Lord, open unto us. And he shall answer and say unto you, I know you not whence ye are. Then shall ye begin to say, we have eaten and drunk in thy presence, and thou hast taught in our streets. But he shall say, I tell you, I know you not whence ye are. Depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth when ye shall see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, and you yourselves thrust out. That's the day, that's the point of weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping and gnashing of teeth when the door is shut. But we understood that to refer to hell. That was going to happen in hell forevermore. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. No, once we learn May 21, the door is shut, then we saw weeping and gnashing of teeth commences at that point. And it's not in a place called hell, except I guess you could say hell is on earth for 5 months, and that would be a place. But God is not going to create a whole world called hell. He has no intention of doing that. If we go to Psalm 104 and verse 35, it says, let the sinners be consumed out of the earth, and let the wicked be no more. Like Revelation 21:1, there's no more sea. Isaiah 57 says the wicked are like a troubled sea. Let the wicked be no more. There'll be no more sea. Because there is annihilation. There is total destruction. Go to Psalm 37 and verse 9. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon Jehovah, they shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. The blackness of darkness forever. If you are going to describe nothing, non-existence, how would you describe it? The blackness of darkness forever. Nothing. That's all we can picture when we try to think of nothing. Close your eyes and it's dark, or you look maybe into the dark night. That's nothing. And so God uses that to describe what He will do to all of the unsaved that are in the world. And, you know, we had thought there would be a place, but we were wrong. And God has corrected us. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3, and we'll look at one verse, 2 Peter 3. Verse 10, it says, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up." Did you ever believe in annihilation? I'm talking about in the past, before we learned about annihilation. There are a few people that did teach and hold to that doctrine of annihilation, of the sinner, and you can find their writings. Not many. Most people throughout the church age taught eternal damnation in a place called hell. But did you ever believe in annihilation? You just asked that. Yeah, but the answer is yes, you did and I did. Before we learned, and a couple of years, 3 years ago almost, about annihilation, we believed in the annihilation of this universe, didn't we? We believed the annihilation of this world. We believed the annihilation of animals, of plants, of rocks and trees and grass and seas. We believed in the annihilation of everything that was in this creation except one thing, man. That was the teaching all throughout the church age. This world will be annihilated. The whole creation will be destroyed. And I remember people upset about that because their dog would cease to be. I remember calls into the open forum, and the person was upset. "You mean my dog's not going to heaven?" No, your animal, when the dog dies, he ceases to be. That's it, no more. No more. There's nothing left of that dog. And it's kind of strange, isn't it, that we believed the only thing that wouldn't be annihilated was man, who is made in the image of God, and was the most honorable of God's creatures, the highest of His creatures, the best of His creatures, that we thought He would take that creature, man, and abuse him and torture him and destroy him forever and ever and ever and ever. But everything else we rightly recognize will be annihilated. We correctly understood that everything in this world would be annihilated. And yet we were wrong about man. We were wrong about the nature of God and His goodness and His love and His kindness. He's not going to throw man into hell forevermore. Look again in 2 Peter 3:10. In the second part of the verse, "The elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up." The Greek word translated as works is ergon, or here I think it might be in the feminine, but it's a plural word, works. It's not referring to buildings. It's not referring to houses. It's not referring to man's creative artwork or his design, his architecture. It's not referring to any of those things. Works, argon, is normally a word associated with spiritual things. For instance, a man is not justified by the works of the law. That's argon. That God, who has begun a good work in you, will complete it or finish it at the day of Christ. These works aren't physical. They're on another level. where God says in Galatians 5, He speaks about the works of the flesh. Lust, envy, pride. You can't grab a hold of those things. It's on a spiritual level. If you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we find this word used. God likens His salvation plan to different things. On one hand, it's a vineyard. It's producing fruit. And He likens Himself to a husbandman. On another hand, it's building up a wall like in Nehemiah, or it's building a city, and we're all living stones. And so that same idea is here in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 10. According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, is God really looking at building with these materials upon Christ physically? No, we know it. It's spiritually pointing to those that are true believers, typified by gold, silver, precious stones, and those that are not true believers, the wood, hay, and stubble. That's the work that's in view. In verse 13, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. 2 Peter 3:10 is speaking of fire. The elements shall melt with fervent heat, or the earth is going to burn and the works therein. And here in 1 Corinthians 3, God is looking spiritually at people. He's looking at people. Some people turn out to be gold, silver, precious stones, and that's a good work by God, by Christ. And other people turn out to be wood, hay, stubble, and they're going to be burned up. Every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it. On May 21, it will be revealed who's the wheat, who's the tares, who's the sheep, who's the goat, who's the gold, who's the hay. That's definitely going to happen. We'll know who's Jacob and who's Esau, who's Cain and who's Abel. Every man's work will be revealed on that day. We're going to know 100% absolutely, because all God's people will go up and all those not His will remain. For the burning. The tares are bundled for the fire. And so here, this day will try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he has built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. But he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. This is the word ergon. Ergon, works having to do with people who hear the gospel and either they're saved or they're not saved. Many are called, but few are chosen. They are the works. If you look at 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 1, it says, Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work? In the Lord, Corinthians, the Apostle Paul was a missionary to them. Are not you people my work, my ergon? The works will be burned up. They'll be burned up with the whole earth on October 21 of 2011. And actually... what is going to happen to the world is going to happen to the people that are left in the world. We know the world's going to be annihilated. We know the universe is going to be annihilated. And everything in it, the animals, the plants, the oceans. But what about the people? The works will be burned up. Go to Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51. And verse 6, it says, "Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath, for the heavens shall vanish away like smoke." And that's what we're reading in Revelation 21:1. The heavens and the earth are passed away at that point. Now the new heaven and new earth are being created. The heaven and the earth are passed away. There's no more sea. The wicked are like the troubled sea. So here, this is the same, looking at the same day. "For the heaven shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner." In like manner. So if the heaven and the earth are being annihilated, and I don't know anybody who thinks this earth is going to endure into eternity, it's not. It's very clear. The Bible states very obviously, this will be destroyed. The world will perish. The universe will perish. Man will perish. Cut off. No more. The wicked will be no more. In that very day a man dies, God says, his thoughts will perish. He is like the beast that perishes. And that's a horrible thing, because man isn't a beast. He was made in the image of God. He was created, yes, to be the highest of God's creation. And it's an honorable thing to be made in God's image. But that honorable man will die like a frog, or he's going to die like an insect, or he's going to die like a dog or a cat. The beasts die, and that's it. And man too. Man too. It's not a... Some people tend to be kind of bold, since they heard it's not eternal damnation. Therefore, I don't have to worry about anything. I can do 5 months standing on my head. Can you? It's going to be an awful time. An awful time. I don't know anyone that willingly wants to burn his little finger, let alone be in an awful 5 months of torment. Who would want to willingly go into that and experience that? And yet there is a way of escape for God's people, and we don't know who they are. And therefore we do have time to go to Him before we perish. Well, let's go to Deuteronomy 25. Deuteronomy 25, and I think you've heard Mr. Camping referred to these verses recently in the first three verses of Deuteronomy chapter 25. It says, "If there be a controversy between men," and a controversy, that word is translated as contention. It's translated as a cause or a suit, like a lawsuit. It's translated once as suit. And it's also often translated as strive, when men strive together, like when Lot's herdmen strive with Abraham's herdmen. This is the word contention. There's a matter to be settled, like the two women. Remember the two harlots? One of them overlaid her baby, and then the woman who did that and her baby died. She took the other woman's baby. And she said, "This is my baby." And so they were both making claims that the baby was theirs. And they went before Solomon. And Solomon was to give judgment. And after hearing the case, they both continued to claim that it was their baby. He called for a sword. And they brought a sword. And he said, "Cut the baby in half." And the woman whose it was, the mother, well, her bowels yearned for the baby, said, "Oh, no, no, please don't do that. Give it to her," because a mother's love would much prefer it even for a wicked woman to have the baby than for the baby to be dead and destroyed. And the other woman, though, she said, no, cut the baby in half and give half to her and half to me. And that proved the wisdom of Solomon, that of course, obviously, the other woman was the mother. And if she wasn't, she should have been. because the one woman who said, cut the baby in half, well, that's a horrible thing. And you know, by the way, speaking of eternal damnation, it's 1,000 times more horrible to desire for someone to be in hell than it would be for that woman to desire that baby to be cut in half. That's an awful judgment. And who would want that? For the baby to be divided and to instead want babies and children who died as infants to spend eternity in hell, suffering forevermore? Well, don't be too hard on that woman who wanted the baby cut in half. Because what you're desiring there is far worse. It's greatly worse. If there be a controversy between men, and they come unto judgment. Now, this is the context. Judgment. To decide that the judges may judge them. Then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. So it's a matter of judgment to try and find out who's righteous, who's wicked. Now, if you look at Matthew 13, it says in verse 48, but he answered and said unto... that's chapter 12. Matthew 13, 48, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. So there is, God is going to make distinction between the just and the wicked at the end, at the very end, on judgment day. Well, Deuteronomy 25 is setting the context of judgment between the righteous and the wicked. The righteous are to be justified, the wicked are to be condemned. And it goes on in verse 2, and it shall be, if the wicked man be worthy to be beaten, that the judge shall cause him to lie down and to be beaten before his face according to his fault by a certain number. 40 stripes he may give him and not exceed. Lest if he should exceed and beat him above these with many stripes, then thy brother should seem vile unto thee. 40 stripes. This is the law of God. The Word of God. The whole Bible is a law book. And the law says in a matter of controversy, where you're going to make judgment between the wicked and the righteous, you may give stripes, yes, to the wicked, but only 40. You can't go 41 or any number above 40. And the Jews understood this. They took this literally because the Apostle Paul, who was hated by them, if the Jewish authorities would have wanted to beat anyone without limit, it would have been Paul. They whipped him 5 times, he says in 2 Corinthians, 5 times received thy 40 stripes save one. That is, they gave 39 because they didn't want to accidentally go over the number 40. 5 times he was whipped by the Jewish authorities. And even though they desired greatly to keep whipping him, they had to refrain themselves. Because there's a law. There's a law of God that sets a limit on judgment. You cannot just continually, eternally, forevermore beat someone. It's not lawful. It's not legal by the Bible. And God, is God subject to His own law? Yes. What's that Psalm 138? It says, let's see, in Psalm 138, verse 2, the last part, for Thou hast magnified Thy word above all Thy name. God's word, that's the law, is above all His name. He will not do anything contrary to the Bible. He can't. it would be breaking his own law. Even when Jesus was needed to be a high priest, he needed to be a high priest in order to offer up himself. He couldn't just say, all right, now I'm a high priest and I'm going to offer up myself. God was so careful and so particular that the law be followed. Since Jesus was of the tribe of Judah, not of the tribe of Levi, he had to insert into history Melchizedek. It was not something that he just thought he'd do or wanted to do. It's something he had to do. He needed a high priest that was not after the order of Levi. Jesus couldn't be both of the tribe of Levi and of the tribe of Judah, and it was necessary for him to be of Judah. Therefore, for him to legitimately be a priest, there had to be a law. And notice that we don't just find inserted into the Pentateuch, into the Ten Commandments, or into the law book. Some people think just the first five books of the law. God didn't just insert it as a commandment, a law to be obeyed, but he inserted it into history. Because that proves the whole Bible is a law book. Remember in Galatians, when the question was raised, do you not hear the law? Do you not hear the law in Galatians 4? And then he went on to recount how Abraham had two sons. And he was recounting history. It's the history in the book of Genesis. But the question was, do you not hear the law? Because all the Bible is the law. So God put Melchizedek into history, and this man, who is Christ, just making an appearance in history. It's the only time he shows up in Genesis 14. He's just suddenly on the scene after Abraham and his servants do battle with the kings in the valley of the slime pits or the valley of salt. And Abraham wins a great victory. He rescues his nephew Lot. He gets all the people and the things from Sodom and the cities of the plain. And then he gives tithes of all to Melchizedek, the king of Salem, who is Christ himself, the king of peace. And he pays tithes to Melchizedek. And God points out in Hebrews 7 that Levi was in the loins of his father Abraham, therefore demonstrating the greater priesthood of Melchizedek over Levi. And God did all that just so Jesus could be legally a high priest to offer up himself. That's how careful and meticulous it is for God to follow his own law. He won't do anything contrary to his law. So for somebody to say, all right, that's just referring to that one particular law of Israel, you can't exceed 40 stripes, has nothing to do with God's judgment at the end and his wrath upon sinners. That is wrong. That is completely wrong. The word stripes here, it's used twice, the second mention of it. Lest if he should exceed and beat him above these with many stripes is translated plagues in the Old Testament. It's not just the word stripes. It's also translated plagues. Much like the New Testament word in Luke chapter 12 that is translated stripes. And the Greek word is plague. Plague. You can hear how similar it is to plague. In Revelation 22, verse 18, whoever adds unto the words of these book is subject to the plagues written herein. The stripes written herein. That's the word that is translated in Luke 12. Let me read here from verse 42. And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward, whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household, to give them their portion of meat in due season. Blessed is that servant, whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. of a truth, I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he has. But and if that servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens, and to eat and drink and to be drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, or catch him like a thief, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. Now, many theologians relate this to the end and eternal damnation. But look at verse 47. And that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. Stripes. Many stripes and few stripes. But stripes. Stripes. There's a limit on the number of stripes. There is a set boundary. 40. 40. No more. No more. You cannot say that God will throw someone into hell and whip them and whip them and whip them. How many times can you whip somebody in eternity? How many times must a person be whipped before you exceed the boundary of the law of God? Well, God is using a figure of speech with the number 40 as far as relating it to his judgment. It's not... Of course, he's going to whip everyone literally with stripes, but he has set a limit on the judgment itself. And how can we understand some who are beaten with more and some who are beaten with less stripes? Well, the more will get the 40. The more will get the max. But can't a judge also say, well, I'll beat someone with 30. I'll beat someone with 20. You're still being beaten with stripes, but you're not getting the maximum limit. And when God relates those who knew their master's will and prepared not, they get the more. And those that did not know their master's will, they get the less. I think we understand. We understand that we're being told. We're being forewarned of our master's will. We know what is going to come. Therefore, if you know what is going to come, but you don't prepare yourself, you're not ready, you're not saved, you're going to be left behind, you will get the max. And that is when God raptures his people, when he takes his people, resurrected and raptured, into heaven. All those left behind of them will be those that are getting many stripes and those that are getting few stripes, but all getting stripes. Those that get the most will certainly be those that thought they were going to be raptured. Those that thought they were a Christian. And also, I don't think it's going to be very pleasant for children, for family members, for people that have been hearing this and hearing this and hearing this for so long leading up to that day. Because the torment certainly is going to be, I was told and told and told in advance. I knew about this and I didn't do a thing. I didn't even try to read the Bible. I didn't even try to go to God and beseech him for mercy. I just followed my friends. I just followed my own mind, actually. Full responsibility falls on each individual. I just did what I wanted to do. I didn't listen. I didn't believe it. Well, the merciful thing is that it comes to an end. It comes to an end. The 5 months will end, and that's it. And then there'll be no more sea, no more wicked. There'll be no more creation. It'll be gone, this creation, and God will recreate a new heaven and a new earth. And that is something to be thankful for. You know, we feel grief that our family members and friends and neighbors and co-workers, that people are going to experience 5 months of torment. But can you imagine the burden if we thought, if God in His mercy didn't reveal to us how good He is, and that He is going to destroy man, and it's not forever. It's not forever into eternity. And so that is a very real comfort to each child of God. Let's stop here and we'll close with a word of prayer. Dear Father,